to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwindaker and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review and follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter.
We're here to talk some more about some recent news headlines that hopefully provide some insight and analysis and practical application that you can take back to the office to help protect your organization.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
You know, when I was a kid, I thought all the intelligence bots were going to be like Cherry 2000. Or, you know, maybe that was just wishful thinking on my part.
Unlike you, my first bot experience in the movies was Terminator. That is a completely different future.
All right. So the first news headline is data highlights growing threat from intelligent bots operated at scale by cyber criminals.
My God, Terminators?
At scale. So maybe it's Terminators actually in the future since they only send a couple back. But actually, if you see the TV series, they sent a bunch back for different reasons.
That actually makes more sense. Like if you've got a time machine, you don't just send one back and expect it to do the job. You're like, I'm going to send it back to birth. I'm going to send it to 1 year, to 2 years, to 3 years.
No, they had a whole bunch of different motives for sending them back. So not all of them were focused around John Connor. Some of them were to, you know, kill this person or make this happen or whatever. So they were attacking the problem from multiple angles as well. Not just focusing on John Connor.
That's a good strategy. I mean, you've got the history, right? So you can just go through and make sure, you know, this person makes this decision at this time. They need to survive until then, and then they can go away. You know, this person tries to stop them. Maybe it'd be better if they died.
Right. And you need this AI to do this development here, you know, where this breakthrough needs to happen and so on and so forth. But yeah, if you've not seen the Sarah Connor Chronicles, highly recommend it.
Interesting. I have not.
All right.
That's not so why we're here. Sorry.
It took me a minute to get back to where we were at. All right. So this is from Security Week, and this article is based on the 2022 State of Fraud and Account Security paper published by Arcos Labs, which is a startup which has a primary, or I don't know necessarily a primary, but a large funder of it is M12, which is Microsoft Venture Capital Fund.
Interesting.
Now, the article itself is not great. It talks a lot about attacks the metaverse, and that's only one slide in the entire paper. So I would highly recommend that you take a look at the links in the show notes and actually go and look at the paper on this, because the report has a bunch of statistics on it focused on the growing threat from intelligent bots, you know, operated at scale by cyber criminals. And the metaverse is just one slide in the whole slide deck. So I think the writer of that article kind of missed the point. And actually, surprisingly enough, this is the same guy who wrote the article we did a couple of weeks ago, the 2022 future AI stuff, where there were a couple of things in there where you're like, well, I think he missed the point of this and was off the mark as well. So maybe it's a theme with this guy.
I mean, like we talked about before, he probably has a certain number of articles he's got to crank out per day.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about that. I can't remember what that was in relation to.
This guy, it might have been another one.
It could have been. But yeah, there's a lot of detail in the paper that there's going to be too much for us to go through the whole thing. So we're just going to hit on a couple of key points in the paper. Like I said, I suggest you go and take a look at it. It's got some pretty interesting ideas or concepts or things about this changing landscape as far as intelligent bots go that I think would be valuable for a lot of folks. So one of the main things one of the things that they kick off the paper with is that, and this is actually stated in the headline for the article as well, or the subheading for the article, is that intelligent bots are three times more complex than they were just 18 months ago, just a year and a half ago. And when I read that in the article, I was like, you know, how do you even measure that kind of thing? And in the paper, they said, with the way that they indicate that these bots are three times more complex than the previous bots is that they have to analyze three times more values on average to detect that a bot is a bot versus.
I was curious about what exactly the values they analyzed, and the only things I could find for certain were mouse movements. They mentioned that when it's a human user, the mouse tends to make swooping trails across the screens, versus when it's a bot, the mouse will click at one point and then teleport and click at another point, which was really interesting.
or make a perfectly straight line. I think that's part of their secret sauce, which is why they did not get into what these detection points are. Because I mean, I'm not in the business of bot analytics, so I'm sure there are a lot of things that I could probably think of if I sat down and concentrated on it. But since I'm not in that business, I'm not sure specifically. But what this actually made me think about is the Voigt-Kampff test. From, it said on average, you know, how many times did it take you to determine that this was a bot versus a human in Blade Runner? So very similar kind of concept, where they talked about the Nexus 6 is more advanced, and you could tell that because of the Voigt-Kampff test. So not everything about the predictions for the future are way off, like, you know, Cherry 2000. A couple other data points that they have in the article are 1 in 4 new account registrations are fake. So 25% of new accounts are fake. 80, this is the one I thought was really interesting. 80% of login attacks are credential stuffing.
And that's super interesting how often that's happening.
Yeah, and 86% of all attacks are bots. They've seen a 16% increase in mobile attack traffic. And another one that was pretty interesting that kind of surprised me was that they say that in 5 of 6 industries, they've seen an increase in attacks. And the one industry where not only have they not seen an increase in attack, they've seen a 300% reduction in attacks is in gaming versus the previous year.
That makes no sense to me, unless for some reason they've decided gaming's not as profitable.
I don't know. I think thinking about this from the gaming aspect, I think it's a matter of different people are looking at the problem. Because in gaming, I think they've been dealing with the, I'm not sure exactly if there's a technical term for it, but the anti-cheat stuff for competitive gaming. So I think the reason that the gaming stuff is progressing, being able to prevent the attacks against bots, is they've been able to take that anti-cheat stuff and port it over to anti-bot stuff and harden things to the point where it's less profitable to even attempt those attacks versus going after other targets.
That's interesting. Yeah, because definitely they've got a lot more pressure from people that play the games to not let cheaters ruin the game for everybody.
Also, the stakes are higher. I mean, there are sponsored gamers who make millions of dollars.
My son wishes he was one of them.
What's that?
My son wishes he was one of them.
Don't we all? I mean, I wonder though, you know, if it doesn't get to the point, like, you know, well, I won't use that reference, but where, you know, gaming becomes a job and it's not fun anymore.
No, that's actually what I think about, right? Because yeah, you're sitting there and you've got to practice your League of Legends or whatever 50 times, and you know, you gotta focus. You can't just play the game. You're like, all right, so what am I doing this time? This time I'm working on, you know, my jungling route. I got to get my jungling route down to the most exact route.
Right. And you have to write your macros and, you know, work on that and, you know, figure out if, you know, this perk, which gives you 0.5%, is better than that perk that gives you 0.6%. And
you can't just use the meta, because if you're using the meta, you're at the same level as everybody else. So at that level, you need that 0.5%. Whatever, if you can get a 0.5% edge.
Right. Yeah, and I've been accused of making games not fun before, because I have OCD and I have to play a game if I buy it. And it's, you know, been difficult for me to quit before the game's over. But anyway, the point of the intelligence bots is that they're caring about, or the way that they're defining or referring to intelligent bots is that they're carrying out complex orchestrated attacks versus a repetitive one type of attack. So they're starting to chain different types of attacks together in order to be more successful at accomplishing what their ultimate goal is. For instance, they say that, you know, they'll have a bot that will link tapping into stolen credentials or synthetic credential providers while doing device and IP spoofing and circumventing CAPTCHAs and additional items, which I don't think they're talking about here, which are part of their secret sauce detection stuff, but even more than just those things. So linking these complex or different types of attacks, where in the past you'd see one bot that does, you know, the stolen credentials and one bot that does IP spoofing, et cetera. So it's, they're starting to chain these things together into, and partially what they're calling hybrid attacks as well. And that's kind of goes with the CAPTCHA thing, where a bot will do part of it. And at some point it will then trip over to a human to do some action and then trip back to the bot completing whatever the activity is.
It's really interesting. That would definitely, I can definitely see how that would, it talks a little bit later about the bot fraud farms, but that makes sense. So one farmer can monitor a bunch of different bot operations. And when it gets to the point where it needs a human intervention, again, you know, do them one after another and keep track of 10, 15, 20 attacks going on at once.
Yeah. It trips a flag, sounds a buzzer, and yeah, you know, the human, like the drinking bird, goes over and hits the key or whatever.
Yeah, and then they get a treat, right?
Get one Bitcoin.
I wish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, some of these guys, maybe that's the case, you know? Yeah.
You could probably train monkeys to do that, actually.
Crows. I'd rather train a crow than a monkey.
That's fair.
So for all these different methods, the paper rolls this stuff into like different categories of these techniques. So you have what they call sophisticated evasion techniques, emulation of human behavior and response, complex orchestration of attacks, hybrid human bot cyborg attacks, which is, this is where your Terminator comes in.
That's the original Terminator. The movie doesn't go into it, but they were originally built like that to solve these CAPTCHA issues.
Give me your Bitcoin. And then the other two are new monetization across digital front end attacks and spoofing and emulation erode trust in signals.
So actually, that's something I've been curious about. Where's the monetization come from here? Is it from like ordering stuff from retail websites and then not paying because they're using stolen credit cards or stolen identities? Or, I mean,
I think that's one of the aspects in here. And we'll get down to some of this other stuff based on their recommendations. We'll give you an idea about what some of these types of attacks are. But in the paper, or, you know, some of the recommendations or talking points within the paper are, you know, understand what your adversaries are after and how they profit from whatever it is they're doing. And you try to interrupt that profit collection method. Mm-hmm. And something that the article highlights on that the paper, you know, references, but doesn't go into a lot, is user engagement, or what they call the user engagement principle. So as user engagement increases, so do attacks. And this seems, you know, pretty simplistic or common sense if you think about it, that, you know, the attackers are going to go where the users are. You know, the more users there are on a platform, the more likely that they're going to be attacked, because there's, you know, more victims, if you will, that are present at that location. So,
and more camouflage, more sense. People to hide in, more people to spoof, more people to steal from. Yep.
Right. You're talking larger volumes too, because imagine if you have a platform that sees a million logins a day.
Yeah.
That's a lot of noise to hide in when you're doing your attacks as well.
As opposed to, I know they mentioned in the article, Second Life, like if you're trying to steal from people in Second Life, there's only like 10 people there. And if you're the only crook.
Yeah. I was actually going to say, if you're trying to steal from the people who listen to this podcast, you know, you're usually found out.
It's like being the only pickpocket on a farm. You kind of stand out.
The only pickpocket on a fishing boat or something.
I lost my wallet. It's one of you three.
No, it was Jaws.
It was Jaws.
The Kraken. You missed it.
Should have trained. You could train an octopus to pick a pocket, I bet. Yeah, they're pretty smart.
Yeah, I've heard that. Actually, there was an article I read recently about octopuses on MDMA. Kind of interesting.
They have perfectly good MDMA and they wasted on the octopuses?
Well, the octopuses didn't think it was a waste. But this is where the metaverse thing comes in. And you know, as Matt mentioned, Second Life is one of the archetypal?
Yeah, it was the big first locations one.
Of metaverse.
And I think I saw recently that it still gets like 500,000 logins per month. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was an article I was reading or I was talking to somebody about Second Life a few years ago, and they were having all sorts of problems with inflation of the lindens, which is the money supply within Second Life, because, you know, they weren't exercising proper market capitalism when they were operating like a central bank and they were having inflation problems. But maybe they've figured that out since. And the reason they mentioned the whole metaverse stuff is because 80% of bot attack, they've seen an 80% increase in bot attacks and 40% more human attacks than other businesses. You know, but if you see if, you know, 80% increase, it's up from 0 to 8, then, you know, I'm not sure if those numbers really make sense. But some of the other bot related stuff that they reference is, you know, cloud computing services that offer free services for a short period of time, something like that, that these fraudsters are attacking them. If they're able to do just one, they'll get in there and they'll run crypto mining software on there and they'll get booted eventually before they're found out or the trial period ends. There's not a lot of profit in that onesie twosie stuff. But if you're able to do this at scale with, you know, thousands or millions of free computing resources done through a bot on a cloud platform, then you can actually turn a profit on that type of activity. But there's a lot more in the paper. I highly recommend you go through and read it. We really don't have time, unfortunately, to go through the entire thing. But some of the ideas that they put forth in there about how the attackers are doing what they're doing and the approach that they're taking in mitigating these intelligent bots is pretty good. And of course, the reason that any of this matters is that, and Matt and I have talked about this before, where, you know, we're going to get to the point where the bad guys are using AI to attack us and we have to use our AI to attack back. So in the interim, you're going to have this move from, you know, stupid bots to intelligent bots to, you know, the whole AI driven stuff. And the more intelligent these things get, the faster their attacks are going to be and the more difficult it's going to be to identify them and respond in time before you really start losing money or customers because of the lag between the automated attacks and the human response.
You know, that what you say though implies to me that we could do a fair amount to start mitigating against this by adding some extra time into the process.
The whole concept that they came up with this idea for fighting spam before is the proof of work kind of thing, where, mm-hmm. you know, if you add, you know, 2 seconds to a human interaction, maybe that's not that big a deal on an individual level. A human won't have any problem, you know, crossing that threshold or using that additional 2 seconds. But if you're talking about someone who's trying to get millions of things done, you add 2 seconds to that time scale, it then becomes much more unattractive for them.
Yeah, I think they mentioned that. Actually, you know what? I'll talk about that. I added this all the way at the end at the what you should do about it. But yeah, you add a second or two to every transaction. And per person, like that second or two is going to be involved in the downloading and the recognition and the, oh, where's the button to submit?
Right. As long as the friction is low enough for an individual, that's not going to have that big of impact on your users. But like I said, at scale, the more friction you add, the exponentially more difficult their problem becomes. And what they recommend in the paper is they say there are 4 must-haves for the digital businesses to prevent fraud in 2022. The first
their
one is
a product.
You're right. That is the first one, advanced bot detection. So you got bing, you got that on the first try.
Yay.
So one of the interesting things I thought that they as how they referenced the advanced bot detection was saying that it uncovers faults in the bot story across network, device, and signal behaviors. So they're talking about using or having bot detection not at one place, but several places, and then pulling those detection together in order to identify something hinky is going on. So this kind of ties into a concept you and I have talked about before with the risk-based alerting.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, you pull that larger story together from different data points and say, well, does this story make sense or not?
It's AI. It's all AI.
Yeah, it's the magic of AI. Now, Fred, you can't spell magic without AI.
That's factually true.
So the next item is multi-layered user behavior analysis. Third one is powerful change or powerful challenge strategy, which is more than, and actually what they put in here is frustrates CAPTCHA solvers. So, and this is kind of, I don't know, this is kind of weird because they say frustrates human CAPTCHA solvers while also not adding friction to good users. And I've run into CAPTCHAs before. They're just straight a pain in the ass. And I've run into them two or three times.
I've run into CAPTCHAs I have not been able to solve as an actual human. Like that I'll put in like three or four or five times and it keeps coming back telling me that I don't have it right. And I just give up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I told you the one about that wanted me to select mailboxes and wouldn't let me proceed until I clicked on the parking meter.
Yeah, that'd be a problem.
So I don't see how you get this done, because if it frustrates the human CAPTCHA solvers, which are, you know, can be, I guess maybe what they're talking about is here. Well, I don't know. When they say human CAPTCHA solvers, that makes me think they're talking about humans who are solving CAPTCHAs, who could be good users. So I don't see how you do this without raising the friction for good users and yet frustrate human CAPTCHA solvers.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you tell human CAPTCHA solvers from not good human CAPTCHA solvers? I mean, I guess you could look at things like the IP they come from. And I guess if it's a mix of human and bot, then you've got some indicators before that.
Well, it also may depend on your customer base, possibly. Because if your CAPTCHA is, let's say, culturally based, and a lot of human CAPTCHAs, or, you know, the fraud farms or whatever are located in a different country, then those cultural CAPTCHAs could be more difficult for them to solve because they're not culturally aware of that. Yeah, I remember
cheeseburger or which brand of cheeseburger is the best?
it's what's a quarter pounder of cheese?
Yeah. How do Americans like their steak? Well done. And served with ketchup.
You know, because there was a book I read years ago called No Greater Love, which was about a special forces team in Vietnam. And they were involved in a firefight where, and this is supposedly based on a true story, where they were involved in a firefight and the NVA were listening in on their radio signals. So they were trying to signal to their air support with colored smoke. And if they used the color over the radio, then the NVA would throw the same colored smoke and throw off the whole thing. So what they ended up having to do is saying, hey, we're going to pop smoke that's the color of the Boston Sox, you know, in reference to the baseball team, which was able to frustrate that type of attack because the NVA were not aware of American baseball teams. Yeah. And yet a lot of Americans at that time, you know, today it might be more difficult because the you know, people are watching less sports or less baseball than they used to, you know, in the 60s.
The pilot's like, I've never watched baseball.
He's like, what's the main color of the Alliance and World of Warcraft? You know, that might not work so good because I think World of Warcraft is pretty much international. But yeah, maybe that's what they're talking about here is using, if you understand your customer base, maybe you can use CAPTCHAs that will be better understood by them than by those who are participating in the CAPTCHA farm. But the last item is actionable insights to work smarter. And that's, you know, providing better information to your security team in order to respond to these attacks. And as we talked about earlier, they said it's important for you to know what your adversary is after, how they profit from whatever it is they're doing, and how they get to that profit. And if you're able to interrupt this whole flow anywhere in between, then you can disrupt their attack. And along those same lines, you know, what's the path they take to get there? How did they get in? How did they get their money out? And what you want to do is increase the cost anywhere along that journey, like we were talking about with raising the friction level. And they say to do this in an adaptive risk fashion, which is more along the lines of saying, well, if your user does this, maybe you present them with this level of friction. If they do this other thing, which is more risky, you raise that friction a little bit and you kind of scale it along those kinds of lines. And apparently this, what they've seen is that people might be looking at how they're being attacked in the wrong way. in that they are being attacked from a payment fraud perspective, but that's really the symptom of the cause, which is account compromises. And you should be focused on where the true problem lies versus what's on the surface. And this kind of goes back to the concept of the five whys root cause analysis, saying, you know, why did this happen? And then analyzing that answer to say, well, is this the ultimate reason, or really is this something which indicates that something else is going on before that? Which brings us to our closeout quote from, I think it was the CEO.
Yeah, this is all the way at the end of the PDF. I thought it was really interesting, and I grabbed it and copied it in here. So you mentioned the friction before, but he specifically called it out. The way that they provide protection is we do that by driving up the cost of attacks so much that the perpetrators simply give up and move elsewhere. When you provide enough friction for attackers while ensuring good users pass through easily, you can be assured of having a fraud-free digital platform. That's probably not 100% true if you're if what you have is important enough or makes them enough money, it's probably not fraud free. But yeah, I mean, this is the same thing with security, right? As long as you're not the last guy when the bear is chasing you. And that's my security theory. Don't be the last guy the bear chasing.
Well, that's the whole point is, you know, since security can't be perfect, be good enough so that they decide you're too much trouble. All right. And the next article.
Oh. No, mine. Go away. Next article is mine. This is from Dark Reading. It's called Why Security Pros Are Frustrated with Cloud Security. It is a report from Lacework, which does cloud security. They have a platform that you can plug your API into and your credentials from your cloud security, from your cloud platforms, and it'll go out and it'll do inventory and it'll check them for configuration issues and stuff like that. They interviewed 500 security practitioners and 200 executives, which is a pretty decent sample size, I think.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Although what's interesting is actually in one of the first metrics they mentioned in there is a third of developers, I think something, but they didn't mention how many developers they interview. So I don't know if the developers is a subset of the security practitioners or not, but whatever. Interesting points. 55% of security professionals believe at least half their time is wasted.
So that's about, what, 26% of all time then? Yeah, 50% or 50%? 25? I don't know.
I'm sorry, what?
You have 55% of the security professionals, then half of their time is wasted. So that's 25% of all time.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, you could argue that an awful lot of time spent in meetings is probably wasted, but that may be a personal thing that I have.
Well, I think a lot of people feel that. And and even so, the ability to get away from meetings is like really difficult.
Yeah. And I know this is actually specifically like I'm not in an IR role anymore. And a big part of that is because I know it was extremely frustrating. John Snow. Yeah. I know that incident response right now is extremely frustrating because you tend to see the same things over and over and over again. You see the, you know, people clicking on links, weak passwords, you know, exposed to the internet RDP and SSH. Like, it's just so painful to do incident response to the same thing year after year after year.
Right. And I think that's one thing that you know, why it's so important really for our security move more towards automation is so that more the novel things are what people are dealing with and not the stuff that happens over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we talked about beforehand, like getting those basic stuff done. Anyways, I'm frankly shocked that 55% of security professionals believe that fully half of their time is wasted, especially since security professionals tend to be fairly skilled and they tend to be fairly well paid as well compared to a lot of other workers. That's something that we talk about burnout a lot in terms of security analysts, but I think that this has got to be part of it as well for more advanced security professionals too. If you're well paid and you're technically skilled and you can leave and get a job and you're sitting at a job where you think half your time is wasted, you're probably thinking about leaving.
Now, you know, I hadn't thought about it until just now that you mentioned it, but one thing they don't say in here is what level were the 500 security practitioners
That's fair.
Because if they interviewed 500 level ones, I imagine that, you know, they're sitting there watching an IDS with a 95% false positive rate. Oh, I'm sorry. These guys are special because they're looking at 20% false positive rates.
Yeah.
Then they're believing that a lot of their time is wasted because they're sitting there staring at false positives, running those false positives around.
No, you're right. And actually, I would have loved to have seen a breakdown, especially on that 55%, because I want to know, are these the cloud security people? Or are these the IR people? Or are these the engineers or the compliance people? I can imagine if I was a compliance person, I would think at least half my time was wasted probably.
Yeah. And if you're an audit person, it's like 95%. Security is so big, you know, security professional is hard to say, you know, what role are they really filling within the security profession?
Yep. And I kind of want to say,
that's not to say that if you're in the security role over here, that your opinion is invalid or anything like that. But everybody's got a different perspective on things when you're talking about a profession this, I don't know if you want to call it necessarily complex, but with this so many moving parts or so many different possible jobs or avenues in it.
Yeah. So on kind of a related note, they mentioned that a third of developers think their time spent on security is meaningful. So kind of the opposite one, only a third of developers think their time spent on security is meaningful and two thirds think that it's not meaningful. So that's a huge problem if developers think the time spent on security is not meaningful, the majority of them. Now, as I mentioned before, developers were not called out as part of the survey pool. So I don't know where exactly if they pulled in a finding from somewhere else for that, but that's weird, but important.
Yeah. Well, if later in the article, they mention about the premium for different roles, and one of those roles I mentioned is AppSec. So I wonder if these are AppSec developers.
Oh, that would make
sense. That think, you know, a third of them think their time on security is wasted. And if that's true, one third of AppSec developers, that's really upsetting. That's
really
to
bad. Yeah.
To hear that. Because these guys in modern times, they're almost like IR at the tip of the spear in doing defense right now, ensuring that code is secure and doesn't suffer from these problems that you're seeing any vulnerability that you see that comes out, regardless of where it comes from, that stems from a mistake made in programming, you know, in application security, whether it be, you know, not sanitizing inputs or not checking your buffers for size or whatever. And the AppSec guys are the ones that are out there trying to prevent those kind of mistakes from causing severe harm to organizations later.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. But we need to keep moving. A third of people reported that they were very frustrated and they were dealing with a greater than 50% false positive rate in the cloud, which sounds like about normal for most SOCs. And the majority, though, said that they had a greater than 20% false positive rate. So its false positive rate was between 20 and 50%. Which is, frankly, I mean, that's bad, but that's not terrible. I've worked at SOCs where we wish that we were between 20 and 50% false positive rate.
Yeah, those numbers seem low for that.
Yeah. Well, so have you used a tool like Lacework?
I have not.
Okay. It does tend to generate a lot of stuff because what it does is it goes through via API and it finds all your configuration issues and then throws them all in a dashboard for you. So that definitely I can see. It's like a vulnerability scanner effectively. It's configuration issues, plus it can sometimes detect, you know, IR related issues as well.
Now, do these tools also automate remediation? So you can say, is a mistake, just fix that.
Yep, you can. If you trust it, which is, you know, a thing.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that you have to trust it so much as know what the heck it's telling you. Because if it comes up and says, hey, this is a problem, you're like, okay, we'll fix that problem. And then you find out, well, that was insecure by design because we're doing this with this thing.
Yeah.
It can cause some real problems.
You correct it and everything stops working.
Right. Exactly.
You know what actually I was talking about the other day with somebody on this was it would be great if a lot of these automated tools could be built into a ticketing workflow. So like, you know, when rather than just telling you it's got all these problems, it creates a change request in your ticketing system. And then as soon as that change request is approved, then it goes out and remediates. And like you could schedule it through the ticketing system. That'd be really cool too. You like the ticketing system says this change should start on, you know, Monday at 12 noon. And then it'll build that into the workflow and be like, all right, on Monday at 12 noon, we're going to go out and do this. And that way the person can be there and ready and watching as everything gets remediated. And that way, if stuff breaks, they can roll it back.
Well, I haven't worked with this type of tool specifically, but I have worked with a bunch of other security tools who will integrate with at least some of the most popular ticketing systems like ServiceNow or Remedy to create incident tickets, not necessarily change tickets, to say, hey, this is something that needs to be looked at and corrected. But I'm sure if they have access to the ticketing system API, there would not be a too heavy lift to say, oh, well, we don't want you to create incident tickets. We want you to create change tickets to perform this action. Now, about whether the tool can schedule that action, that's a different story. But if I think, you might be, I mean, depending on your level of the skill of the team that you have, both on your cloud tool and on your ticketing system tool, you could probably automate that, because what could happen is that the tool kicks off and says, hey, create a change, schedule at this time. And then if the ticketing system like ServiceNow has automation built into it, when it gets to that time, the ticketing tool can then kick off a script, which then goes back out to the tool and says, okay, execute.
Yeah. I was actually just thinking, I think I could do this in a SOAR tool that I've used before. I'm pretty sure I could do this. And then you could also set off the changes to be done like one per hour or something. Not like, but like, you know, one configuration change across the environment per hour. That way you've got time to test it and validate between. So it doesn't run like 50 different configuration fixes across your whole environment. And if something breaks, you're like, all right, which one did it?
Or maybe you could do sample. It says it does one, sleeps for a week, and then does the rest or something like that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff, potentially.
All right. Automation can be awesome.
Can be awesome. Yeah. So they also complained about security event data being of uneven quality. Yeah, that's always been an issue. Shortage of meaningful data from the cloud. This is an interesting one where I've actually been poking around at this and I haven't figured it out exactly. You can usually get pretty good data from, you know, like AWS from CloudTrail. But then there are certain parts of it, like the Lambda functions. Like, I'm not sure exactly how you get the data out of there. You almost have to build the logging into your application to generate logs from those.
And if you're talking about, you know, cloud's a big place. So I think, you know, the approach that you and I have been talking about is looking at it from, you know, the IaaS perspective. But if you're talking about cloud from like a SaaS perspective, then the ability to get logs out of a SaaS solution is like pulling teeth almost.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's logging is really important in a SaaS solution too, because you're responsible for the data that's in there. And if you have no idea what's going on within the tool with the data that you put in there, how are you supposed to determine whether whatever's going on is right or not? It's kind of like the cloud providers have said, oh, well, according to the shared responsibility model, this is your problem. And yet they don't give you the tools in order to deal with your problem.
Well, yeah, because then you might find something wrong and yell at them.
Well, it's not that. It's that they, you know, they're like, well, that's not our problem, so we don't program it in because that takes extra work, and we don't provide an API for you to be able to get the logs out.
Especially for stuff.
I don't know how many SaaS providers I've talked to where I'm like, hey, you know, I would at least like to know, you know, who logged in, when, and from where, and they're like, oh, well, we can't give you that data, let alone what did they do when they were in the tool.
Yeah.
It's like pulling teeth with these guys because it's not built into their tool.
Fair enough.
Like, well, you can log in and look at the logs. I was like, that's not helpful.
So,
and that's not even true a lot of times either, that those logs are even presented within the tool. So it really depends on which cloud provider you're talking, which type of cloud you're talking about, where these kinds of problems are apparent or more challenging than others.
So on a related item, they mentioned that Burning Glass Technologies released a separate report stating that cloud security is going to see 115% increase in demand and that there'd be a $15,000 premium for those roles. So that sounds exciting if you're in the cloud security. And the only place where they saw higher demand is, as David mentioned, would be application security, which actually application security, I would assume, would be getting software engineer-like salaries because it demands a pretty similar skill set.
Right. I would say it demands really the same skill set plus security on top of it.
So it should be paid more.
Yeah, I would say so. And this coming from somebody, you know, who can't rub two sticks together. So I'm not getting that kind of job.
That's fair. I mean, you just have to pretend long enough to get hired. Anyways,
they make it really difficult to be fired.
I mean, if you get hired at the right place. And then they comment that the gap seems to be getting bigger and bigger every year with people unable to find people with the right security skills. I think it's a short I think, again, the quote continues, I think that this is a problem in the short term, but it might be a blessing in the long term, because the lack of a ready pool of capable cybersecurity folks means that we have to rethink how we approach to cloud security. And you had a comment on here.
Yeah, this is the whole necessity is the mother of invention thing. It was like, oh, well, if we don't have people throw at it, then we have to come up with automated or machine learning ways to deal with it. I think that's kind of what they're saying here. And I'm not sure if that's really going to work out in the short term. I think that's he thinks it's going to be a short term. It's what's the deal is that the long term solution is going to be automation and machine learning. It's not going to fill that short term gap. I think we're just going to suffer in the short term.
That's funny. So the survey was done, as I mentioned, by Lacework, which is a company who is trying to sell a product that solves this problem. So, you know, take all their claims about this with a grain of salt. But I do think that platforms like this, I've reviewed a couple, Lacework and Prisma Cloud, and there's some other one that I don't remember, but they are actually really interesting. And they're so much easier than trying. Like if you're trying to get logs from your local environment, you've got to get your IT administrators to go out there and set up the logging and forward them to someplace and collect them somewhere. Like these just do that all automatically. All you have to put in is an API key to your cloud environment, and it goes out and it gets all the inventory for you. It starts pulling in the logs for you. It starts doing IDS detections for you. It does configuration and vulnerability management stuff for you. It's so much easier in the cloud to do some of the security stuff. And that's really the problem we've run into in the past, is that nobody's built it specifically. But now that companies are actually starting to build these products that will do it for you, it is so much easier than on-prem.
It's annoying that these aren't built in the cloud already.
Well, yeah, right. The security is always behind.
Why does it matter? So the world's moving to the cloud. So you need to get on board with whatever you're going to do when you get there and think about this stuff ahead of time and plan for it and be prepared or deal or come actually address these things if you're already in the cloud. And well, what you can do about it, you can feel sad and spend a bunch of money.
Yay.
But I think, you know, if you had a really skilled cloud person for whichever platform you're on, whether it be Google or Amazon or Microsoft or whichever, you pair that individual with a security person, I think they could probably make some really game-altering changes for you in making your cloud environment more secure.
That makes sense. All right. Well, that looks like that's all the articles we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.